Welcome to Season 5 of the Fight Science Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan Sullivan. In this series, we are further expanding our knowledge by speaking to experts in the fields of physiology, psychology, nutrition, strength and conditioning, and mindset training. We'll be speaking to the coaches and practitioners who do this every day, and to the researchers and academics who are at the forefront of the latest science. Today, our guest is Dr. Georgie Bruinvilles. Dr. Georgie is the senior sports scientist and research scientist at Orico, a leading sports data and analytics company. She has completed a Bachelor of Science with honours in physiological science at the University of Bristol, and has also completed a PhD from University College London focusing on iron deficiency, the menstrual cycle, and the female athlete. In this episode, Dr. Georgie is going to talk us through the practical considerations that coaches need to think about for their female athletes. This is a must listen for any coach that works with female athletes. So let's get to it. And green light means we are live. So back for another episode of the Fight Science Podcast. So today we have a very special guest, Dr. Georgie Bruinvilles. Did I say that right, Dr. Georgie?
Perfect.
Smashed it. I've been having a shocker with names this season, to be honest. I think I've got all three of my guests so far. Their names are not 100% correct. But Dr. Georgie, thanks so much for coming on.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Now, we'll get straight into it. Dr. Georgie, you are a senior sports scientist and research scientist at Orico, and you are part of the brain team behind the Fitter Woman app, which is getting extremely popular. It's extremely useful. Georgie, could you give us an elevator pitch just about yourself and how you kind of got onto this field?
Yeah, of course. So basically, I have always been fairly passionate about female physiology or physiology in general, and through the course of my PhD, which was looking at the menstrual cycle, heavy menstrual bleeding and iron status, it quickly became very apparent to me that actually the menstrual cycle as a conversation is not freely discussed. It's not open. I think because I'd studied physiology pretty much throughout my whole kind of more senior life, I have almost had the pleasure of being able, because I find it so interesting, of being able to understand it properly and be educated about it. But it quickly became apparent through my PhD that actually most women have no concept of what's going on in their body. They don't understand why they might feel as they do on any one day. And I think that's absolutely nuts. Like, we know historically as well that most research has been conducted not just in sports science but in medical fields as well in men, just because of the ease around managing the hormonal changes that we know occur in women, and also just because of historical reasons around not wanting to harm unborn fetuses, etc. So actually the lack of discussion in this area or understanding in this area, combined with the historical lack of research, I guess massively like fueled my fire of wanting to understand this more and more and to help as many girls and women out there understand it better. And a large part of that, as you said, when I finished my PhD, or alongside it as well, I was working for a company called Orico, who I still work for today. Orico are a sports science and data analytics company who historically have worked in a lot of elite professional sports, so in basketball in the NBA or in the Premier League in the UK, or with golfers, track and field athletes, a whole range of different sports. But we hadn't specifically had a focus on the female athlete, but I guess I was given this pretty exciting opportunity along with a colleague to develop a female program, and as part of that we developed our free Fitter Women app, which you just mentioned, and actually our coach platform that links up to the Fitter Women app, Fitter Coach, which I'd love to talk to you more off air about too. So that's where we are really, and we're now working with a whole range of different elite athletes and teams to effectively apply a degree of like sports science support around their female athletes, be it in a focusing on their menstrual cycle perspective or looking at blood markers, etc. That's where we are now.
Yeah. Georgie, if it's okay with you, can we keep this fairly practical? Because I think there's going to be a lot of coaches. I know there's a lot of coaches that listen into the podcast. I guess first and foremost, if you had a female athlete, what's almost the first point of call if if you're going out and you're seeing them and they say, hey, Dr. Georgie, I want to start taking this more seriously. What's the process that you'd go through with an athlete?
Yeah, good question. So I think the first thing for me is to educate them. Like always, 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 education is just so important. Cannot get away from that. And their support team needs to be educated too. So it's all well and good. And I know from a practitioner perspective, if my athletes knew about this and I didn't have any concept of it, it would be frustrating because I think it's really important to have everyone on the same page. So education is fundamental. But alongside that, I always complete, like develop this like very long and extensive menstrual history questionnaire, which is just so useful for me as a practitioner to really understand what their current menstrual status is, what their menstrual history is like, symptoms, align that to nutrition, just so many questions. And so once I've got all of that together, then I do some very much kind of individualized monitoring, getting them to track their cycle, track any symptoms, etc. There's a long a long extensive process, but I think the important thing is that the athlete comes, if the athlete came to you, then you've already got their buy-in, so they're already very keen to want to learn more. I think for some people, particularly in a team environment, there's this real state of acceptance that, hey, I get these symptoms, or my menstrual cycle isn't very regular, but you know, I'm a woman, I get on with this, it's the card I've been dealt. There's this kind of suffering in silence concept. And so I think breaking that down is really important, not to say, hey, you're a woman, you're going to have really bad symptoms, but just say, let's be proactive here. Let's work out what is going on, and manage that if necessary.
Yeah, I want to get back to that and talk about the symptoms and kind of carry on air the discussion we just had off air. But before we go there, can we wind it back a bit? And can you just give us an overview, Dr. Georgie, about, okay, what is considered a normal menstrual cycle? If there is a normal menstrual cycle, what do we consider that to be?
Yeah, there's a lot of debate around what is this normal menstrual cycle. And I would actually say, my honest opinion is, unless you're taking blood tests to measure hormones on a very regular basis, so I'd say maybe every few days throughout a menstrual cycle, it's actually really hard to say you've definitely got a normal menstrual cycle if you're aligning what we deem to be a normal menstrual cycle to what research suggests is a normal menstrual cycle, which would mean, you know, hormones are continually changing and fluctuating at the key time points. But that being said, I mean, typical literature would say that a cycle length, so from day one, which is the first day of the actual period, to the next day one, first day of the actual period, research typically says, well, literature says that that would be 22 to 35 days, that period of time. Now, yeah, I think that even within that, you can have anovulatory cycles, which might not be picked up. Is a normal cycle a cycle where you could actually have really, really bad symptoms? Do we even class that as normal, or is that dysfunctional? What about tracheal and heavy menstrual bleeding, polycystic ovary syndrome, endometriosis? Both of the last two conditions we know are actually relatively common, affecting 7 to 10% of women, if not more. So yeah, I think there's just so many challenges around saying what is normal. But I think one thing that through my experience I would say is having a cycle length that's consistent is really important, and having a pattern, a footprint of the menstrual cycle that's relatively similar. So if someone's, it's, you know, cycle length is typically 26 days and it's 26 days for a few cycles and then suddenly it's 35 days, then that's definitely, I would say, abnormal and suggesting that something's going on. Or if they typically experience bloating, cravings, menstrual cramps and lower back pain, and then suddenly one cycle after having experienced that kind of symptom pattern, suddenly they get like horrendous vomiting or really bad headaches, and that's definitely a sign of an abnormality, in my opinion.
And Dr. Georgie, I guess what I'm hearing for this is that understanding that symptoms that you went through in your menstrual history questionnaire is pretty important for this, to understand, okay, well, what is your normal footprint and what is normal for you?
I would also say that tracking is crucial alongside it. So as part of the education session, obviously using our Fit to Women app, I always induct people onto the app and ideally the coaches onto the coach platform. The two systems marry up so the coaches can track that. And if I'm working with the athlete as well in a kind of consultancy, on a consultancy basis, I will also add them to my coach platform. So then I can monitor when symptoms are being experienced and which symptoms are being experienced over a period of time, which is just, yeah, totally invaluable.
Yeah, and we're chatting a little bit offline because I guess in this little area in particular, for practitioners like myself, it can be very conflicting because there's confounding information. Are symptoms normal on this? Are they not? Should they have them? Should they not? Are you doing something wrong if they are having them? What's your thoughts around that? And can you tell us about the data that you've collected around this area?
Yeah, so firstly, my belief, and after speaking with lots of athletes, is that and reading a lot and understanding how, so actually probably the best way for me to start this is to step back and to think about what happens through the menstrual cycle. So we know that the hormonal profile or hormone release is constantly changing. So if you start during menstruation, there's very low levels of estradiol and progesterone, which are the two primary ovarian sex hormones. Then through the follicular phase, estrogen levels or estradiol levels increase to a peak just prior to ovulation. That then causes LH, the luteinizing hormone, to increase, which then triggers ovulation as a negative feedback kind of as part of like negative feedback to this increase in LH. Estradiol drops off. But then as a result of ovulation, estradiol and progesterone then increase, and there's this kind of high hormone phase in the second half of the menstrual cycle before the corpus luteum, basically, if there's no fertilization, the corpus luteum starts to break down, and then there's this massive drop off in hormones. Now, most people experience symptoms either where there's this drop off of hormones or during the actual menstruation little window. And the primary reasons for that are your body. So the hormones travel in your blood. So they travel around your whole body. So they can affect the way you think, the way you move, the way you breathe, the way your heart beats, the way you metabolize food. So, and we know that there's receptors for these hormones throughout the body. So when you've got loads of hormone in your body and you suddenly take them away, obviously the body's going to respond and react. And we also know that that withdrawal from hormones is what drives the menstrual blood loss. So it drives the breakdown of the endometrial, the womb lining. And that process is pro-inflammatory. By nature, that has to be pro-inflammatory to trigger this breakdown of the endometrium. And that's largely driven by these things called prostaglandins. So in terms of the normality of symptoms, well, if that process is going on in the body, then through the withdrawal from hormones or the sudden changes in hormones or the secondary response, which is like an inflammatory response, symptoms are very common. And actually, as you said, we did this study last year with 14,184 women, looking at menstrual symptoms, menstrual characteristics across seven different territories. And we had some like really staggering results. So obviously, as you just said, I was showing you before a subset of that data. And these are all exercising women. So regularly exercising women, Strava users, some people exercising more than 7 hours a week. So like they're definitely like high level exercisers. Showing that, so 95% of that data set experienced mood changes at certain times in their menstrual cycle, for example. I think the primary or the most common symptoms were mood changes, menstrual cramps, cravings, bloating, and lower back pain actually is really common, particularly in certain sports. So I'd see a lot of that in soccer, for example. But yeah, so symptoms are really normal, and that's a side effect of the hormonal changes. That being said, and a lot of work I do is around managing symptoms. So we know that eating well, managing stress appropriately, sleeping well, Like having good travel strategies in place, all of those factors really help if they're managed well to control symptoms. But also there is, I believe, a genetic predisposition to certain people experiencing symptoms more badly or worse. Yeah, so I think it's very individual. Like everyone's cycle is totally individual, and it's all about learning what is normal for a specific person and then working to their individual cycle.
Hey guys, just a quick interruption of the podcast to ask you a very simple question. How many supplements are you taking? This is something I ask all of my new clients, and it has never ceased to amaze me just how many sups they take, but how little they actually know about what they are taking. The thing is, it shouldn't be that complicated. That's why during the COVID period, my colleagues and I created TrainAid, a series of just a handful of lifestyle and performance sups that we recommend and use with our clients every single day. No gimmicks, no extravagant marketing, and no buzzwords. Just stuff that we know works. If you want to know more, then head to www.trainaid.com and sign up to our email list. That's TRAINADE.com. All right, back to the podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this is a good segue into this next conversation I want to have with you, is when we kind of layer on, you know, the performance aspect of this. And okay, let's put this in the context of training. And okay, if we want to maximize training or get the most out or give our female athletes the best opportunity to themselves, the best chance to get the best out of themselves, how do you go about doing that? Do you consider this cycle and go, okay, there's specific phases that are more appropriate for this type of training? Or again, is it just managing the symptoms for the individual?
Yeah, that's a very good question, and I think it's a hot topic. Now, I think first thing I just want to highlight is in terms of performance per se, so for you with any of your athletes, for them to be able to fight at the best of their ability on any day of their menstrual cycle, I feel pretty confident that providing there's no underlying menstrual dysfunction, so no extreme menstrual problem like endometriosis or another menstrual dysfunction aligned to that, that they shouldn't be held back by their menstrual cycle on any one day. So performance can be achieved to the highest level on any one day, providing symptoms are managed. So if you're going into a competition, you're premenstrual, you have horrendous symptoms, then, and that really is quite common. Like I've very rarely come across an athlete I work with who says, nah, don't have any symptoms, like nah, nothing affects me. So, and that's not me fishing around. It's literally just, let's put our cards on the table and work this out. Like even from a coordination, clumsiness, brain foggy perspective, like there's a whole range of different things that women can experience. But I really believe that you can put a plan around that specific cycle to manage those symptoms to get an athlete to be able to perform on any day. And actually there was a recent systematic review conducted which really highlighted that. Now, that being said, I think it is important to consider that we often don't look at this premenstrual window where most symptoms are experienced. So in terms of reaching that optimal performance, it's going to be harder for some people either premenstrually or during menstruation. And I would say in those cases, often after competing, those athletes are going to feel more whacked. They're going to take longer to recover. So if you've got heat, semis and final, for example, in track and field or in swimming, then that recovery is just so crucial. And that's where you can make the biggest gains in that specific timing. So that's performance. I definitely believe that much more research needs to be conducted looking at performance premenstrually and sort of on day one and two of the menstrual cycle. In terms of training and adapting training now, I still believe this area is really in its infancy. I think, and I, the kind of patterns I follow on an individual basis are working with specific individuals to see how they are feeling on different days of their menstrual cycle and see how they're generally responding to training. Because if actually, so there is some evidence to say that when estrogen is dominant in the first half of the menstrual cycle towards the middle of the cycle, so the sort of late follicular phase, that the body's ability to adapt and respond to training can be a little bit greater. And there's a number of different mechanisms suggested for that, but primarily the role of estrogen in terms of like being an antioxidant, in terms of membrane stability and recovery of muscle tissue specifically. That does mean that estrogen might be more of an anabolic, have more anabolic actions compared to in the second half of the menstrual cycle, where progesterone is thought to have more catabolic actions. If you're seeing an athlete reporting, oh, I feel really, really good in this phase, like I feel I bounce straight back off training, and you can see, if you're a SNC practitioner, for example, that they are actually able to absorb a bit more training, then fine, crack on, I would say, ensuring that they're recovering properly. And obviously, we all practitioners periodize training anyway, so actually you could really work that with the menstrual cycle. But in a team environment, that's really not realistic. I really also think that it's too individual to say, I don't know, in a football team I was working with, for me to suddenly waltz in and say phase one and two, so we call break the menstrual cycle down into four phases. So I can come in and say, athletes in phases one and two, you go over there. Phases three and four, you go over there. Because it's just not, in my opinion, research doesn't suggest that it is as clear cut as that yet. It's very much on an individual basis. So I guess the short answer to your question is, yes, I think that potentially on an individual basis, this can be considered, but on a squad-wide basis, unless you are really monitoring every athlete very carefully over numerous cycles, then I think we're not quite there yet in terms of adapting training. Nutrition, I believe, is a little bit different. I feel like we're a bit further ahead with that. But I would also say that that doesn't mean that you can't look at prehab, rehab, activation around the menstrual. And that's something which I definitely do with my athletes. And I look at how we can get them to the training pitch or to on the field or on the track in the best possible state. And, you know, there is some really interesting research around estrogen and soft tissue and the impact of estrogen on soft tissue, for example. And I think that it would be remiss to ignore that existing research and not use that to help athletes generally with their prehab, rehab, recovery, etc. And I also very much would look at different recovery mechanisms throughout the menstrual cycle too, and the place different levels of importance on different timings of recovery.
The first thought that comes to my mind when you say that is similar to like when you sweat sodium test a group of athletes and you're like, okay, well, here's out of the group of 30, there's three that are very heavy sodium sweaters. And, you know, there's a couple over here that are mid-range and some that are over here. And okay, don't have to worry so much about potentially there's these three over here that we don't know that it could be really bad, but we should probably, is that obviously not that simple, but is that kind of the same concept that we should be approaching this for? Or
I think that is very right, completely. I think that everyone has their own unique footprint around this. And yes, there are some people, I feel like there's buckets. So like there could be groups of sort of three symptoms which very often come together, and certain individuals are more susceptible to certain kind of bundles of symptoms, and they might occur or be more likely to occur premenstrually or during menstruation. But yeah, definitely, like there are everyone is so different. And I think without measuring hormones on a very regular basis to really gain the hormonal understanding around it, I think that is challenging to be able to understand that, unless, because also we don't know, someone might have really high levels of estrogen in the first half of their menstrual cycle, just pre-ovulation, but we didn't even know how their body's responding to that. We don't know how their receptors are expressed differentially around that. So I think there's just so much left to understand, but I believe the best way from an applied perspective to manage this initially is just to get athletes tracking their menstrual cycle and symptoms, and then at least you have a clear footprint of what their cycle is looking like. And realistically, if you're working with 20 different athletes, you're going to have 20 different pictures, as you highlighted.
Let's go into it. Let's talk about the Fitter Woman. I'm assuming that's how you do it. That's how you go through. I guess give us a bit of a rundown how you got to it, to the point, and then, I don't know, if everyone's listening, how do we use it?
Yeah. So I guess basically through doing my PhD, I guess as I highlighted, it became very apparent that education is not out there around this subject. And there's huge numbers of myths. Like, one of my first studies of my PhD was interviewing 1,624 women around heavy menstrual bleeding. And it was in the build up to the London Marathon. So they were running the London Marathon. And I guess by me standing there asking them questions about their menstrual cycle, it made them suddenly think, huh, oh my gosh, finally there's someone I can talk to about this. And I just got so many different questions. You know, can I exercise when I'm on my period? I've heard that you can't do handstands when you're on your period. When I'm premenstrual, I can't get out of bed. Is that normal? I've been told that, you know, I should drink this, eat that, do this, do that. And I was like, oh my gosh, like, I can't believe there's so many myths out there. So I guess that started my passion to try and work out the best way to educate women. We came up with the idea of this Fitter Woman app, which essentially, like, the first aim of it was just to educate women. So you log in, you enter your menstrual cycle information, so when you last had a period, how long your cycle typically is, how many days you typically bleed for, and then it provides education around. Now it bases it on having a normal or a relatively normal cycle, which is really hard to get around, particularly when we kind of first launched our very much like test product. So it's very much an educational resource around physiology, what that means in terms of, you know, whether you need to focus a bit more on this in your warm up, or from a dietary perspective, what does that mean? And so we kind of developed this app which does that, and then over the last couple of years we've updated it a fair bit, where I guess we also provide loads of like latest sports science information specific to the female athletes. So whether it's what is endometriosis, to you know, what are the different types of recovery that can be used, to what are good sources of iron, and all of that kind of thing. And we've put in a load of recipes in there, so based on where you're on your menstrual cycle. So for example, we know that, as I've already said, the menstrual cycle is this pattern of inflammation. So where we know that your body's most inflamed, well, how should we eat to support that? We know that certain foods can exacerbate menstrual symptoms, so let's not include them at certain times. And then a massive part to the app is tracking. So tracking specifically when individuals are menstruating, so they're on their period, but then also tracking any symptoms that are aligned to it. Now, the key thing is, I found over time that as athletes, like, athletes prepare for everything, but they often don't prepare for their period. So sometimes the period just comes along and they haven't been expecting it. So obviously, I believe tracking is very important to help athletes prepare, but also to appreciate if their menstrual cycle suddenly becomes irregular. So if they don't have a period when they should have a period, or if their symptoms suddenly get really bad. So they can see all of that through their app. Now, recently we developed this coach platform, which basically they marry up together. The coach platform is also very much aimed at educating practitioners, because again, I believe that's so important. And then alongside that, it's got a whole section, I guess, really highlighting how different menstrual profiles, or what different menstrual profiles mean. So it's got the educational side of thing specifically, but then it's got the actions as well. So for you as a practitioner, what does that mean? It also sends alerts if an athlete misses a period or has an elongated cycle. It sends alerts if symptoms are excessive, and it just gives you an overall picture on any one day of you get to training and you know, oh, this athlete has 5 symptoms today. So you're prepared and you can be proactive around it, and then you have the tools to know what to do.
Excellent. Wow. That sounds phenomenal. Well, Dr. Georgie, I'm very mindful of your time, so I don't want to take up any more. Just lastly, if people do want to get the Fitter Women app, is it just openly available? Do you have to go through anything?
Yeah, the Fitter Women app's completely free, and that's something which like we're very passionate about at Orico, that you know women should be able to have access to this information. So it's completely free. Everything is evidence-based in there. So all of the information is evidence-based. There's all the publications in this section on the app as well, if people want to go away and read more papers. That being said, I guess we're always trying to keep on top of any new research, which excitingly more and more research is coming out. I love my Monday morning PubMed updates. So we're always trying to update. We've got like a scoring system as to what goes in the app. So we're always trying to update the app to match the latest research. So sometimes there might be a little bit of a time lag, but normally we're pretty on it.
Excellent. Dr. Georgie, last question. You're a research scientist. Is there anything that you're working on that you can reveal to us? What's coming out from you guys and your lab? Anything exciting in the near future?
So we're doing a lot at the moment around symptom management and supporting practitioners around that. We're also doing a fair bit around looking at hormonal contraception, be it the oral contraceptive pill or other progesterone-only options, and the, I guess, implications of that and what they mean. So we've got a study running, or we did pre-COVID in our lab over here, looking a bit more at different hormonal contraceptive profiles. There's loads of things that I'm very passionate around, like injury risk in the menstrual cycle, which again we are looking at that. We're also looking at general like understanding more around different types of menstrual dysfunction, which I think is so important.
Yeah, fantastic. That's super exciting. And it's exciting for me as a practitioner to know that it's coming out. Like I was saying to you before, it is confusing when you're trying to navigate it yourself, and there's confounding information here, confounding information there. So I'm appreciative that you took your time. I know you're super busy to come on, but very last thing, Dr. Georgie, if people are listening to this, they go, oh my God, I need more of this information. I need to follow Dr. Georgie. I need to see her socials, follow her on Twitter. What's the best way for them to find you?
So my Twitter handle is G Bruinvels. And then there's also Orico One, who Orico are obviously the company I work for, alongside Fitter Women, FITRWOMAN. Fitter Women also has a website, as does our coach platform, Fitter Coach. So yeah, there's loads more information there.
All right. Well, Dr. Georgie, thank you so much for taking the time. I know you're super busy, but really appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And there it is, another episode of the Fight Science Podcast. Dr. Bruinvels is leading the way in advancing our knowledge of how to best cater our recommendations for our female athletes. Again, if you're a coach looking to learn more about this, I highly recommend the Fitter Woman and Fitter Coach apps to make use of all the information Dr. Bruinvels has gathered over the years. This podcast will be available through the podcast app, iTunes, Spotify, YouTube, and you'll also be able to download it from my website, www.thefightdietitian.com/podcast. If you enjoy listening to the podcast, then be sure to head to the podcast app to give us a rating and leave us a review. Thanks for listening in, and I'll see you guys for the next episode of the Fight Science Podcast.